Welcome to the Noisecast, a show about technology, gadgets, industry gossip, and more. This is episode 35 for the week of June 26, 2011. We've had a very fun week at the Noisecast, had an exclusive that made its rounds around the big media outlets.
Fuck yeah.
We'll get into that in just a little bit. But actually, we'll dive right in. First off, a big welcome to everybody who's in our Ustream and listening and participating live as we record this. Of course, feel free to join in on the banter, send us your comments. On tonight's show, we have Enos One, a.k.a. Alberto.
Yo, what's going on, everyone?
Gonzo Ryder, a.k.a. Ray.
Yeah, I woke up just to do this podcast.
Nice. And Kevlar Menace, a.k.a. Chris.
A.k.a. the guy who's going to crash the Ustream chat again. Yay!
And types like a behemoth.
Ah, crap. Here you guys.
So, okay. The big Noisecast exclusive this week. We got word that Spotify was going to be launching between July 5th and 15th for a rate of $10 per month. Got hand on some interesting exclusive emails between a source and a record label executive who is well tied into this whole deal. OC Entertainment, aka Eric, posted the article. He was the one that that got the scoop. And it did make its rounds. It hit up Wired and made it on Billboard, Business Insider, et cetera, et cetera.
Really did a great job of that article, too. It was great.
That was awesome. Go us, especially Eric.
Yes.
And it was awesome.
I'm going to jump in on the Go Team bandwagon, even though I didn't do shit.
But no, this was big for us. This was our second exclusive. The first one being Motorola moving its headquarters to California, which it did. And although it did keep its location open in Chicago because Illinois gave them money to. But so this is, we're two for two on our inside stories. So take that, big media. We got some weight to swing around.
Woo!
So about Spotify, a lot of people are sort of confused as what Spotify is compared to services like Rhapsody, radio, and stuff like that. Spotify is very big in Europe. It's considered to be the Netflix of music in Europe. And what it lets you do is it gives you 15 hours free of unlimited of music streaming a month. And it, unlike other services like Rhapsody and stuff or Pandora, where you choose one artist and then it sort of finds songs for you based on your taste, this is you could do any song you want to. Like if it's in our library, you could go straight to that song and listen to it. And then for $10 a month, it's unlimited and it is to every mobile and desktop device you could imagine.
But so, unlike Rhapsody, it doesn't offer downloads, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So everybody's been waiting for this thing to come out here for the last year, and you know they've had a lot of troubles getting through record labels to sign on and so forth. Even conspiracy theorists were saying that Apple was purposely telling people to not sign on because they wanted to get their iCloud service up first.
Oh, what a great conspiracy theory that is!
But out of the people here who are listening and who are on this chat. Would any of you be trying out Spotify, or do you, any of you think that this is something that you would definitely want to have?
I'd definitely give it a shot. I mean, all the music I can essentially listen to whenever I want, any song that I want. Yeah, it's worth a shot. I mean, like, I didn't think I need Netflix until I tried Netflix. And now, to be honest, I don't see why I keep cable around because I have Netflix.
Okay, fair
enough. I don't really think you need cable if you have Netflix, to be honest. This seems kind of neat. I probably won't buy into it just because I'm not really in the market. But if, because you know, a lot of people I know do listen to Pandora, and they listen to Pandora. You know, this was a better option, I think. And Mud Monster makes a great point in the chat where he's like, if this is a free trial, I'd give it a shot. Otherwise, I'm not sure that I'd be willing to pony up the $10.
Well, the current model in Europe allows you to do 15 hours free a month without okay. having to pay. We heard that that same model will make its way into the U.S., but again, nothing is concrete until it happens. So,
yeah,
it's the thing about Pandora is it's nice because instead of just being focused on what you want to listen to, it lets you explore.
Yeah, Pandora has its place. It's a great music discovery tool, which you can't discover enough music, in my opinion. But this is definitely great for listening to just, oh, I want to hear this song. Bam, I'm going to play it right now. It's great for getting the earworm songs out of your head.
Such as?
Friday.
God damn it, do not fucking say that shit ever. I'll punch someone. I hate that fucking song. I got into an argument with some of my friends on Twitter this week because they were saying the lyrics. I'm like, you know, the video got pulled from YouTube and I hoped this would fucking die. And then one of my friends found the school tube link and I was like, motherfucker.
Why did it get pulled from YouTube, by the way? Does anybody know?
I was curious and did a little bit of research. And apparently, the Arc Music Factory or whatever hadn't been paying the royalties that they promised to pay to Rebecca Black and her family because she's a minor or whatever. And so someone saying they were going to, it wasn't a big deal, and then they tried to rent it for $2.99, which was the dumbest fucking idea I ever heard of my entire life. And so instead of having this big legal thing, they just pulled the song. So no one gets any money until they sort it out.
Which is good, because nobody can hear the song.
Well, you know, unfortunately, this is YouTube we're talking about, so there's probably like 1,000 of those Rebecca Black clones out there.
And yeah, most of the videos the company searched for, though, are parodies. Which is just as bad.
Oh, knowing somebody's probably looped it for like an hour straight and put it on YouTube.
What is up with the fucking videos?
You know, all it takes is a cell phone number. Because I did it to my account, and I know I've done it to the Noisecast account on the YouTube. It's pretty much if you validate your account with a cell phone number, you get a text with the time limit on your YouTube videos are removed. So you could put unlimited amount of hours on your YouTube video.
Because I've noticed that it's been kind of a new occurrence. Is that you get these YouTube videos that are like the same thing, but it's like 10 hours long.
Yeah, some guy
like, didn't remember the kid that got pulled down by the dog and makes that awesome noise? That Vito was talking about that one day. It was like, ah!
Oh, yeah.
Go! Ah! There's a video for that. It's like 10 hours of just that loop over and over.
Same thing with the Neon Cat song.
Well, you can't have enough Neon Cat.
It was like 10 hours and 6 minutes. I think the guy who posted it said it took him like some ridiculous amount of hours just to render and upload it.
I can imagine.
I'm curious. What did he like upload it in HD? Did he get halfway through the render and realize that it was in full 1080p?
Fucking matter. It's 10 hours of video.
No, it was a standard definition. And okay. I mean, standard definition, it's, you know, you don't get, I mean, you don't have that full quality, but still, I think you said it was like 3 gigs worth of standard definition video.
That's crazy. Dude must have really just not had nothing else to do, because goddamn.
I'd get tired.
Well, I mean, he'd have to sit there and copy and paste the thing in like whatever he used, Premiere or Final Cut or something, in the timeline over and over and over again till he hit 10 hours.
I hope he figured out some kind of script to do that for him.
That takes some dedication.
I mean, I like Noncat as much as the next guy. It's kind of like a little good 15-second to listen to clear your head. But 10 hours, man. Holy shit.
Yeah, the only way I could even consider doing that is if I had an Apple script that I could use to put that sucker into Final Cut. Because otherwise, there's no way in hell I'm going to sit there and talk about copy, paste, and render.
Yeah, that's a bit ridiculous.
We got off topic.
Good shit.
A little piece of, but sort of on topics, not really on topic, but related to this, if you run, I think, a Windows machine, there's a thing called AutoIt, AutoIt, which pretty much lets you program your mouse to do things while you're not at the computer. So if you needed to do a pattern of clicks, like if you needed to constantly, you know, open Firefox and close it for some weird ass reason, you'll program it and your mouse will sort of move around the screen and do it for you for as long as you tell it to. And it does keystrokes and it does mouse movements and all that stuff.
I could see having fun with that as a net admin.
It's illegal to use in World of Warcraft, by the way.
Right.
Oh, shit.
Because the laws of World of Warcraft are followed.
You know what? Some of those World of Warcraft people that get busted, it's pretty bizarre how they get busted. So, they got some pretty beefed up security. Anyway, yeah, we're off topic. Enough of that. So, Spotify, mid-July, Noisecast broke it first, $10 a month, possible beta only at launch, but eventually it'll be available to the rest of the population. So, yay to that.
Hey, I wonder if we'll get a beta invite.
Hey, Spotify, send us one.
Yeah.
If you don't hate us for leaking out the story.
Oh, man. If you drum up attention for it like that, they're not going to hate you, unless they're Apple. In which case, whatever.
They hate everyone.
Yeah. Apple's ignored every single request we've sent them, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Even the request of, hey, is anybody there? Can you just send us a press release of some sort? Anything, even if it's just, you know, you patched a piece of software? Nothing. So, anyway.
Yeah, well.
Lull Security is retiring, apparently. They hit their 50-day sailing period on the Lull's boat, and now they posted a press release saying that they're done and out. That's it. 50 days was supposedly what they aimed for. And there shall be no more lulls from Lulsec.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. You can only laugh for so long before you pee yourself or your ribs start hurting.
Not quite what I was thinking of. But I was just curious, did anyone happen to notice, like, like, when they started their whole charter, this, you know, whatever, did they say we're only going to do this for 50 days, or are they now saying that we only plan to do this for 50 days?
They're now saying we only plan it, because I don't remember anything saying this is going to be a 50-day venture.
That's not really something that you announce, because then people would just be like, oh, it'll go away. Won't be a problem.
Yeah,
so, yeah they just pretty much said that, you know, hey, this is we're done now. We originally planned 50 days, so it's 50 days, we're done.
That's fine with me.
Is it because the laws were off, or is it because maybe there's some...
The laws are done, and, you know, in the world of amateur cyber hacking, shit's getting serious.
Yeah.
They listen to Kenny Rogers, and they know when to hold them, and they know when to fold them, and they know when to walk away.
And to be honest, I think, you know, the time to walk away was probably 2 weeks ago. You know, they've gotten way too much attention to stay under everybody's radar, so...
Well, it's better to walk away now than to keep doing shit.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
I think Sony was, like, the peak.
Were they the ones that took responsibility for Sony?
Yeah, I think so. Someone correct me on that one. I'm pretty sure that was them.
They did. They were involved with some of the Sony sites. I don't know if they were involved with the PlayStation Network, because they sort of came. They sort of started getting attention after that.
Yeah. Hmm.
But we'll see if Lulzsec still stays around. I guess I doubt that those people will ever go away. They might just reform into another group, you know, and continue what they're doing.
Yeah, change names and shit.
And not broadcast and boast about it everywhere. Biggest thing that got them heat.
Hey, some people like the attention, man.
Yeah, well, not surprised.
I mean, it's no fun doing stuff and nobody knows about it.
Yeah, assuming that you're really just doing it to, you know, kind of be an asshole and let everybody know just how much of a professional asshole you can be, then you have to go out and you have to make sure everybody picks up the story. Twitter, Facebook, whoever.
Yeah.
Make sure it's all over Reddit.
Yeah. I wonder what their clout score is, by the way. You guys, I haven't seen many Twitter clients that do this. I know if you use Seismic, I've seen it on Seismic too. You get sort of a thing called a clout score written under your name on your Twitter account.
Yeah. I'm not using Seismic right now. I'm just using the web client.
It turns out if you have a social networking account, whether it be Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, you have a clout score. And these scores, whether they be clout or any of the other things that sort of give you a number based on your social media relevancy, might play a bigger role in your future when it comes to things like applying for a job or getting some perks or upgrades or things like that.
I did not know that. Learn something new every day.
Yep, and it turns out there's a few different companies: Clout, Peer Index, Twitter Grader. They pretty much, instead of just grading you by how many followers you have on Twitter, they grade you on how well you could on what you talk about on your Twitter feed, as well as how well you influence other people. So whether other people are retweeting you or things like that.
Yeah, and you get a score. Just so you know, Lulzsec's clout score is 84.
The highest you get is 100, which means it's like Justin Bieber God mode.
Justin Bieber God mode.
Actually, I don't think Justin Bieber has a clout score of 84.
I think he has a clout score of 100.
Does he?
I think.
Does anybody know Justin Bieber's Twitter account name?
I'm pretty sure Justin Bieber.
No, here are the highest women clout scores.
Oh, Bieber does have 100. I just checked it. Clout.com/Justin Bieber. And clout is with a K.
Yeah, Justin Bieber does have 100.
Wow. But yeah, so that's a damn shame. We sit here and we have to measure up against Justin Bieber. Okay.
I think most of us over, you know, we can be better than Justin Bieber in almost every way.
Noisecast has a score of 47, by the way.
Oh.
Sure, that's better than mine.
But,
Actually,
I thought there was a list called Dads with Clout.
I'm a 49. Woo!
Well, it turns out there's a whole bunch of companies, that marketing companies, that have signed on to the whole Clout Score service and all these other services, and now they're sort of going into LinkedIn profiles as well. And believe it or not, it gives you a grade on how you act online. It's sort of, if people look you up online, one of the things, like, you know, you Google your name to find stuff about yourself. Pretty soon your score on these things is also going to matter, and employers might look at this too to see what you influence people with. For example, I know under my name, like, for some reason, Family Guy is one of the things I influence people in, which I rarely talk about Family Guy, but apparently I influence people about it. So if you're tweeting or linked or Facebooking or whatever, a whole bunch of junk, like you love to talk about, you know, horse poo or something, well, your future employer might look at that and see you're a major influencer on horse poo.
If he has a question about horse shit, you're the guy to go to.
And this sort of cloud score, you have to keep up with your tweeting and your Facebooking. You can't falter, because if you do stop or go down on activity, your cloud score also goes down. So it's
you got to maintain.
Right.
Shit, Twitter's become a job for most people.
Yeah, I guess people could look at this and say that, you know, whether or not they want to follow somebody and whether or not they want to hire somebody. I mean, if you're applying for a job, for example, and you say, yeah, I love, you know, Sony so much. Everything I own is Sony. I love talking about Sony, this and that. And your cloud score is like 500 for Apple. It might not go over too well.
Well, it depends if all you're doing is talking crap about Apple. There's context. How well does it deal with context?
Well, from what I'm reading, it's a very sophisticated algorithm. It doesn't just look at what you tweet about and who retweets it. It's trying to find out how your tweets sort of are structured and what you say and how it's said as well. It's sort of like a psychological thing to it too.
Hmm.
Because, I mean, before this, it was just how many followers you had. That was how influential you were. I mean, there was a bunch of lists back in the day, like the top most influential tweeters. And they were, you know, people like, what is it, Ashton Kutcher.
Kutcher was up because he has like a bajillion followers.
Right.
Yeah, no, I remember those. And then Lady Gaga came up with the official Twitter account. Then that one became most influential tweeter or something. Then they started doing all these different kinds of who's actually reading which tweets. And then it turns out that, you know, you have like news orgs that are ranked higher than celebrities. But sometimes, you know, it kind of...
Well, I really think to be most influential, it's not necessarily how many followers you have, but how many people retweet you and shit.
How many people join in on your discussion as well?
Yeah.
And the industry professionals say it's also important to focus your digital presence on one or two areas of interest. Don't be a generalist. Most importantly, be passionate, knowledgeable, and trustworthy.
That's really weird. I guess I don't know how many jobs that is actually important. I mean, who's going to hire an accountant because they like to tweet about, you know,
money?
I love spreadsheets. I found this new Excel macro that does the thing when I do the thing.
Well, I mean, it's sort of...
And I plan on working for defense contractor with, you know, utilizing a clearance. They don't want me to have a specifically high, you know, whatever.
They don't want you on Twitter
clout
at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, they don't mind, but it's obviously non-business related. Like, you don't ever mention where you work, anything like, you know, what you do, your company, who you work with, anything like that.
Right, but I mean, it's not like they're... I mean, this is sort of like, think of it on your resume where you have your skill set listed, and your skill set may be...
I've got a 77 on cloud.
But, you know, sometimes in your skills, you'll put languages on there, for instance. You know, you speak English, Spanish, and, you know, Hindi, for example. It's not necessarily like a job requirement that you're looking at, but it's a skill that sort of works towards your advantage. And the same way that companies sort of may Google you, may try to find you on Facebook, will try to look at your Twitter account, etc., before hiring you, this might end up playing a very similar role where people sort of look to see what exactly it is that drives you before hiring you.
Well, what if you have your name on your Twitter account and you're one of those people that clicks the share button under porn videos?
I don't know anyone that does that.
I think you're going to have to do it very, very often, like a few times a day before it becomes an official stain on your clout score.
Nice choice of words.
But, I mean, if it says that your clout score goes down if you are inactive, like one guy was inactive for 2 weeks and his clout score went way down. So I'm guessing, like, you just go disconnect for about a month and it'll be starting with a clean slate.
People don't forget, man. You sent them, you shared that link about Backdoor Hussies 10, and I won't forget.
Gonzo, I told you already, it was for work. It's work-related.
Work-related? You work in the porn industry?
Even wanted me to do a write-up.
We're not Fleshbot here.
Yeah. Don't put a white stain on our name.
But if you want to check out your cloud score, see the whole graph, where you are, who you influence, etc., KLOUT.com/... And then probably your Twitter name. You could always sign in right there, actually, on clout.com with your Twitter or your Facebook profile, which I would recommend doing your Facebook profile.
No.
That's your clout score. Switching over real quick to Verizon. I don't know. I think I'm the only one here that has Verizon. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Vito's not here to join the powwow. But... There were rumors that Verizon was going to be switching to tiered data plans, and that seems to be coming true. There was a screenshot sort of leak of the upcoming Verizon tiered data plans. Now, what has been said is that if you are already in a data plan, the $30 unlimited, you will still stay in that data plan as long as you don't change it. So you'll be grandfathered in. But some of the data packages are pretty bizarre, like $10 for 75 megs. But they range all the way up to, I mean, the $30 package now is just a 2 gigabyte allowance. And you can go up to
$80. That's where AT&T was smart. When they took away the unlimited option to get new unlimited, they made their 2 gig plan $5 cheaper. They could, people who never used 2 gigs would switch and still pay AT&T, you know, way more than 2 gigs is really worth. But, you know, AT&T didn't have to worry about data, you know, overconsumption of data for people that switched. But, sorry, but they still saved people money, or so they thought.
Well, AT&T, though, was primarily the iPhone. And the iPhone, I mean, from what I remember with AT&T, I was not using a lot of data at all. I was like, at most, I think I used, like, a gig one time, but that was,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, but you used Wi-Fi a lot, too, though, right?
With my iPhone?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did. I did use Wi-Fi. I mean, now with my Android, it's all... I can't ever use Wi-Fi anyway, so I'm looking at 1 to 1.5 gigs a month.
See, I've been using Netflix a lot. I, like, at night, I'll start a movie, random, whatever I find, and just put headphones in. And half the time I forget that I have the Wi-Fi turned off. And so this month I used 5 gigs of data.
You, sir, are a champion.
Yeah, that was fun. I was like, oh, let's see what my data usage is this month. What?
Unfortunately, you could also do pay-per-use, which is $2 a megabyte, but unfortunately that's only for dumb phones and not for smartphones.
The thing that I could have read this wrong on the price sheet, but I saw that if you went over if you had the 75 megabyte plan, it was like $10 for another megabyte or something. But yeah, if you went over on your 30-gig plan, it was also $10 for a gigabyte?
No, yeah.
Did I read that right?
Yeah, it's okay. If you're on a 75-meg plan, you pay $10 a month. But if you go over that, you pay $10 for every 75 megs again.
Okay.
But if you're on the 2-gig, 5-gig, or 10-gig plan, you pay $10 once you go over your allowance per gig.
Isn't that kind of a ripoff?
That's a severe rip. Oh, but
how is 75 megs worth the same amount as 1 gig?
It's not, but there's a difference is that the 75 meg is non-smartphone.
Okay.
So there is that, but still, that should be like a dollar. I mean, the whole plan should be like $5 for 75 megabytes and then a dollar per 75 megabytes after that.
Because 75 megabytes isn't very much.
No. I mean, even when I had a dumb phone, it was technically a feature phone, but it's still not a smartphone. I could still use about 500 megs a month if I really tried.
Yeah, it's definitely not impossible to run up 500 megs, especially like, you know, if you're going to use a, I'm trying to think a dumb phone. I use maybe Google Maps once or twice when I was using an old Sony Ericsson, and that would run you, use it enough times, that's 500 megs easy for the month.
Yeah, and then you can
look at people on Facebook mobile videos.
Yeah, Facebook mobile, they have, you know, the Java apps for like Twitter and stuff. Because the mobile site blows. I have a Java app online. So it definitely was, it would easily cap 75 megs.
What I don't understand is why the hell they don't do smartphone pay-as-you-go or these prepaid data plans for smartphones, because they could be making a killing off that stuff. Like, in Europe, I know... not saying that Europe is better or this and that. I'm just saying my experience with my iPhone over there was I paid $3. Was it $3, I believe? And it gave me 60 megs of data use. And every time I ran out of it, it would tell me your allowance slow, this and that. You have 10 megs left. Toss in another $3, get another 60 megs of use.
Well, that just seems reasonable, and I don't think we do reasonable too well here. It's either we're going to make money or we're not going to make money.
But doing something like that, though, it's easy because you're relying on the consumer to be mindful of their minutes and their data usage. And let's face it, consumers are not mindful of that. You know, like Kevlar, he hit up 5 gigs off of 3G.
Yeah,
so they would be making bank on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But the thing is, I think right now we're still kind of, we have smartphones kind of on this pedestal, like it's somehow a status symbol more than it is a actual functioning device. And that kind of, if you think about it, like the, what was it, the Optimus? No, the Comet on T-Mobile doesn't have... I don't think you can actually use a 3G plan or something like that. It was something really, really stupid where you needed to connect to via Wi-Fi to do things like download apps. You couldn't do any of this stuff over the air. But at the same time, they would charge you $20 for the data plan, which blew my fucking mind. I had no clue. You know, I didn't even understand what the hell they were trying to tell me. When, you know, it was just like, you need a data plan for a phone that only has a Wi-Fi antenna.
Right.
So, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, that's where I think we are in the U.S. as a mobile market. The average consumer doesn't, number one, the average consumer probably doesn't know the difference. And then you have people whose jobs is to sell plans, not phones. So, you know, you're going to go up in there. Hey, I need a phone and I need it cheap. Oh, we have this throwaway phone here, but you have to sign up for a $20 plan. What am I signing up for? Oh, you know, to get a phone.
Yeah, that does. I've seen that happen. It especially happened in places where someone goes and they like, oh, I want this smartphone, and they really have no business having a smartphone. But their cool nephew or son has one. They're like, I want one of those too. I could use that. Yeah. And I'm like, well, sir, you need this plan here. It's about $75 a month, but it'll be everything you need and more. But yeah, that's the thing is, you get the consumers are naive, and you know, you get your guy at a store saying, oh yeah, you definitely need this, and they don't know any better.
Yeah.
Happens all the time.
Yep.
Kind of like that damn cheesy ass Verizon commercial.
Which one?
The kid where the kid's like the fucking like nerd scanner.
Oh yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, he's clean bomb.
Except he asked questions that if he were a nerd, he would either know or be able to look up online and walk into the store.
So yeah.
It was a bit fishy.
It was. I was hoping he'd ask some questions like, can I SSH into it or something? That'd be a more relevant question, I think.
Once they start making those references and commercials and start talking about, I just did it for the lulz, or stuff like, or just starting using memes and commercials, is done.
Verizon already does it. They had the cats in the phone, and
that was Sprint, and they had NanCat on it.
Yeah, and I was like, damn it.
Yeah, it was. I was gonna post something about that, but I forgot to, because the other day when I went and saw Mr. Popper's Penguins, they had that Sprint commercial where it's talking about all you want to do is look at cats and all the cats you have, and the cats crawling around the phones. Pretty much made me very, very sad to see that commercial at the theater.
I mean, I like Cute Kitty as much as the next guy, but ruined it.
Mr. Popper's Penguins was some sort of like innuendo laden phrase.
It was actually a porno.
Yeah.
I want to go see Mr. Popper's Penguin.
No, I took my little cousins to see that. Actually, I was okay with it because I love penguins and I sort of want a.
A fucking penguin?
Oh God, yeah.
What do you want a fucking penguin?
Because penguins are like the coolest animal ever.
What? They can't fly.
I don't want them to fly.
They
stand in place
on their egg. They don't even make a nest.
I want them to waddle around and like I want to live in an igloo with them.
Will you make them wear a top hat?
Possibly.
Making a fancy penguin.
I'm telling you, man, that Planters Peanuts guy, little mascot they had, that should have been a penguin.
Instead, why? They make peanuts, not penguin parts.
I don't know. Penguins are awesome.
And we don't know either.
Okay.
There's a breakdown in communications here.
Yeah, we'll just run this in circles.
So apparently our Ustream just launched people into a random commercial in the middle of the thing.
That's awesome.
We better get fucking money for that.
You know what? That probably means... No, it's still working. What the heck?
No, it's still on the air. Well, we apologize to everybody. That wasn't us.
Yeah. Wow.
Unlike last time, my computer's still working.
We'll be right back after the short commercial break.
That we didn't know about. Welcome back, Alberto.
Well, good to be back.
You're no longer a Roboberto.
Roboberto.
That's going to be awesome. I think I'm going to do every single game review I do from now on as Roboberto.
It's like Nintendo Rob's like demented cousin.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, if Rob, had a drinking problem, that'd be me.
It'd be Rob the Slob.
And Rob the Slob. I saw a video review of that little robot they came out with back in the day, and I was like, really? People paid money for this?
Well, remember like, the Aibo?
Yeah.
Like, people paid $700 for that thing.
Oh, fuck people. It's things like that that make me lose faith in humanity.
There's always a glimmer of hope in humanity, though. Every so often, something comes along.
It's things like Florida that make me lose faith in humanity.
Well, I could just stay away and be okay.
Well, then you have things like Groupon and Google Offers and Facebook Deals that sort of bring your hopes back up, right?
No. I hate those things.
Turns out we got there's an inside scoop Business Insider had about the details behind Google Offers, the official sort of counter to Groupon and Facebook Deals. Question, does anybody even use Deals or Groupon?
I have used Groupon in the past. It was actually a really good experience. I made sure it was for a like a dinner at a vineyard. And it was like $50 or $75 worth of food for like $35 or something like that.
They have vineyards in Alabama?
This was in California.
Oh, okay.
But I actually tipped on the full price of the bill. Some people just tip on what they
pay. Like you're supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. You never tip on, you know, what you just pay. The tip should be the full price of the bill because that's what the server is working for.
I've heard some like businesses have had problems with Groupon.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, aren't necessarily the most honest. And they'll use more than one Groupon.
Well, there's also the problem that a lot of like small businesses can't really support that kind of business model where everybody comes in because they have a Groupon deal. But as soon as the Groupon deal's over, that's it. No one ever shows up.
Yeah,
well, I was reading a story about that where a coffee shop had a, you know, there's something going on where there's like a big library opening across from this coffee shop or something like that. Some bullcrap.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. Part of the problem was that the business owner was kind of naive in the ways of business.
They weren't entirely naive. I mean, they were pretty, you know, they weren't completely idiotic, but Groupon does not let you choose the day your Groupon appears.
No.
And it just so happened that this Groupon coincided with something huge. And so a tiny coffee shop on the corner, it's not a Starbucks, it's not used to rushes. It got flooded with people.
Wasn't there Groupon for like $13 and most people only spend like $5 or $6?
Yeah, it was something stupid like that.
And they were using the Groupon, but they weren't using the whole thing. And they're like, can I come back and use it later?
Yeah.
And they're like, no.
And, you know, they're running slow because they had to make 1.5 million, you know, whatever the hell, a chinos.
Frappuccinos. I don't know. Yeah. What do you get at a coffee shop? I don't know.
Coffee.
I don't drink coffee.
Oh, you're weird.
You're not going
to a coffee shop.
Well, one of the things about Groupon that Google offers is doing different, which works towards the advantage of the merchant, is because obviously the merchant has to pay for the Groupon.
Yeah.
You know, they'll get this many deals, this and that, and even though some are used and some are not, they'll still get charged the full price of whether or not they're used or not. Whereas Google, now with Google Offers, they're actually charging you only for the guest offers that are actually cash in instead of the ones that never do.
Oh, that's nice.
That's nice.
It's a step up. It is a step up, you know. That way you can be a small business and take a chance.
Yeah, I mean, the things I heard, that story about the coffee shop, part of it was kind of like, well, maybe she's bitter that she got treated badly. But then, you know, they were talking about how, like, they wanted to take so much money out of the Groupon thing. She was like, I can't do that. And then the guy was like, well, you know, I'll let it slide this time because you're a first-time customer.
Did the, you know, used car salesman.
Yeah, I was like, that's not cool, dude.
No. I thought Groupon was really cool just as an idea. Implementation of business practices, I'm not really a fan of.
I mean, it's one of those things where you're giving literally endless coupons to people because they can print off as many as they fucking want.
Yeah, as many email addresses as they have.
Yeah, they can... And you can make an email address in less than 5 minutes.
Well, yeah. that sort of is the responsibility of the merchant, though, the business, to actually sit down and... Because they have to approve the coupon.
Yeah, that was the problem that this coffee shop had. They didn't have the proper POS to handle all this.
Well, not only that, but it's... like, I've dealt with like something similar to this, restaurant.com. And I mean, it's sort of the same concept of for restaurants. And unless you sit there and read through every single word and make sure you cover all your bases as a merchant and tell restaurant.com, hey, put this in because this is going to fuck us over. For example, it's a $30 off coupon. Well, you can't use it on, you know, if your bill is $31. You know, you have to spend a minimum of, let's say, $50. And restrictions like that, so then you don't get screwed over as a small business. You gotta like sort of take the step up and look into this and say, okay, what is to my advantage, what isn't? And yeah, that's the thing about Groupon and all these things. It's, they're great for the consumer, but for the merchant, for what they offer,
you really got to be sure that you can take the loss if you have one.
Yeah,
and right. Hope you can get return customers, because it's all like having a coupon is about generating new customers that then become regular customers.
Right.
Yeah, which confuses me for a lot of the things I see, like furniture stores. Like, how often are you really going to buy furniture?
Yeah.
But.
Well, and another thing about Groupon is it doesn't pay the merchant up front right away. Like, when somebody their savings or their earnings and stuff, they pay three equal installments. One is in 5 days, one is in 30 days, and one is in 60 days. So you'll be looking at almost 2 months before you even get a full return on what you invested. So you may be already in the hole by that time.
See, that's interesting, because if you try that sort of thing with a bank, they charge you interest. Someone holds on to your money, you know, interest is charged. That's kind of how it's supposed to work. But, you know, I guess Groupon's big enough where they can dictate their own terms and still have plenty of people that want to do it.
Well, I think they kind of become the name with, you know, social coupons. And they're kind of like, well, we can do whatever we want because we're Groupon.
But yeah, I think, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I think with Google stepping in, you know, they have a lot of weight to their name. So, you know, if they can get this to launch right, I think that's going to change. And I think it may be better for all parties involved, not just the consumers. And you know what? I buy a lot of shit. I like to go places. Yeah, I want to pay less. But at the same time, if there's a really good place that I'm going to and they can't afford to stay in business because everybody keeps sticking them with Groupon coupons, then maybe it's best to have variety out there.
Right. And the thing is, I think that Google offers would, if they do it right, if they stick to the plan, because we've seen many times before where some crazy ass Google idea is spawned and then it sort of just fizzles because either Google doesn't give it enough attention or they just don't take the time to really look at it and expand it because of the, you know, whatever bureaucratic reasons they had before. If they take this, they could run with it, because to its advantage, Google already has the infrastructure to integrate this with so many things like places, latitude, the Google profiles are launching with the plus one bullshit, your Gmail, etc. They have all these services that they could tie in with this deals thing that Facebook or Groupon don't have to their advantage.
Yeah.
So if they play their cards right,
if they can nurture it and give it some TLC, I could see it being the next big thing. Once again, it's not for me. I don't do coupons for moral reasons. But I could see it working.
All right. Good chat.
Coupons are evil, man. Don't use them.
Pat in the back for all of you.
That was my butt.
Well, pat in the butt for you, sir. I hope it was enjoyable for you.
It was.
Okay, switching to tablets real quick. The HP Touchpad. It is coming very, very soon. We're running WebOS 3.0, and HP sort of announced that it's going to work better and work closer with developers in terms of discovering applications and making them and things like that, sort of trying to reach out with everybody with open arms in order to take on Apple and the iPad. Does HP have a chance by doing this? What are you guys' thoughts on HP the touchpad?
Well, it runs WebOS, right?
Yes.
I mean, the problem with WebOS is it doesn't have a lot of dev support that I've seen.
Which is why HP just announced this thing called Pivot, which is the whole purpose of it is to pretty much beef up its developer program.
Are you going to get lots of people to jump on it?
See, that's the thing. I don't think HP can play nice enough with the developers. and still make themselves money. Because they're going to want to make money from the App Store. But they're really, the best way to get developers is to give developers tons of money for apps that are downloaded. And the only way you can do that is have a lot of products out there and not charge a lot as the owners of the marketplace. So I don't think they're in a very good position to get developers on board. It's, you can easily port games over, because I know that's a problem with Windows Phone 7. You can't just port games. You can't from iOS. They're written in a different language. You can't just, you know, copy pasta them over. I'm not sure how it works for webOS. I know that there's a fairly decent homebrew scene for webOS, but I don't think that.
But a lot of the major stuff, you're gonna have to get, like, fucking Angry Birds, for example. Everyone fucking sucks dick for Angry Birds.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but they do.
I just got Doodle Jump on my.
Yeah, and Doodle Jump, same fucking thing.
Yeah.
You're going to have to get those people to shell out money to either hire webOS devs or fucking learn it themselves, and that costs them money. Mm-hmm. They might not want to spend that money until they see that, hey, this webOS thing, it's worth getting into. And by that point, it might have failed in a miserable, flaming ball of glory.
No, honestly, in order to get people excited about webOS, don't get me wrong, I want webOS to do well. You know, I've always liked the Palm Pre. I thought it was a really great anti-iPhone. Not saying it was an iPhone killer.
It was great for cutting cheese.
Great for cutting cheese, too. So if you were... yeah, how could you... That was kind of... Yeah. But no, honestly though, I really do like webOS. It was very different at the time when everyone was busy trying to make some feature phones look like iPhone, and that's cool. But in order to make the tablet, you know, outside of an iPad worthwhile, you have to get people to buy them, and you know, putting out $700, $600 Android tablets isn't the way to do it. And if you don't have users on these machines, you're not going to get developers. Developers want to make money. The app stores need to grow, and you're not going to do that if the only people who are interested are the same people who are going to be writing code.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it has to do with, too, like, the reason that Android tablets and the iPad are so popular, and lots of people use Android phones and iPhones. Not that many people use webOS phones.
Yeah.
And people want to be, you know, surrounded in their tech environment with familiar things.
That's that's one of the things that makes the iPad so popular, is that if you already have the iPhone, then a lot of your stuff is really familiar. I have yet to play with a good version of the BlackBerry playbook. I fiddled with one in Staples, but that was a funny story. The screen only worked. It, like, half the screen was the only part that worked, and it compressed the full screen into half of it.
Sounds like somebody molested it.
And they had bolted down, so you couldn't turn it. Or move
yeah,
at all.
I bet they had some serious problems. That always happens with fucking display models, and it really caps my ass.
But you know what? That's one of the things I'll do when I'm looking at phones, is I'll go play with a display model for 5 minutes and figure out what's going to break first on it.
Well, there's a difference between playing with it and fucking slapping it and fucking just
being
a beast.
This isn't Staples. Staples isn't Best Buy. There aren't...
Best Buy is the fucking worst. I remember I played their Rock Band display thing.
Yeah, the start.
And someone had, like, ripped off the heads for the drums and shit. Guitars didn't have straps anymore, so you just had to fucking hold it.
And the funny thing is, at Best Buy, you always have those Best Buy employees walking around no matter where you are. It's not like it's in a hidden display anywhere.
Yeah, like, they can fucking just smash it. Like, I was like, the buttons were all sticking. I was like, what the hell is this? What happens? Somebody come in and just like squeeze out a quickie on here and stick all the buttons down?
That's why you go to Best Buy to get, you know, like, what is this going to look like in a year and a half, 2 years? And half the buttons are missing, it doesn't open, it doesn't slide, like the touchscreen is crap.
Not at all.
Everyday consumer just really pisses me off.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I was to treat my phone like I had more money than sense, what would it look like in a year? I go to Best Buy, oh wow, okay, I'm not going to get that one. For phones, it doesn't matter because they don't have moving parts as much. But...
Yeah, no, it's funny. About a year ago, my girlfriend and I bought a Nikon, that all touchscreen Nikon point-and-shoot as a gift for her sister.
Yeah.
And at the time, I said, that is not a good buy. You know, this thing is going to look like shit. Why? Because we were at Best Buy, and the entire screen looked like... It just looked like it should have gotten, like, a food inspection, like, shut down on it, because it just...
You know, the problem, people go in there and they press the touch screen.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell they were doing. Like, seriously, honestly, somebody must have wiped their ass and then just wiped the phone, because that's what it looked like. So, you know, that to me, that I would never buy a touchscreen camera.
I have one of those. It's my wife's camera, and it works fantastically.
Yeah, no, I mean...
But you don't wipe your ass with it.
No, I wipe it. I think that's a big part of the problem. On the camera. There's an intermediate step, so not all of the crap gets on the camera.
Yeah, it's called washing your hands.
All right,
it's not rocket science.
A few minutes ago, you guys were talking about the whole operating system and, you know, from iPhone to iPad, etc.
Yeah.
The Nokia N9, the Migo, got its first hand-on preview. The Migo software, which was developed by Nokia, Intel, Novell, AMD, and a whole bunch of other people, is a cross-platform friendly operating system based on Linux and the Qt framework, to pretty much give you a streamlined experience across your netbook, your tablet, your car, your smartphone, etc. It got its first actual preview in the real world. And did you guys see any of the preview videos and what it had to offer, by the way?
I saw some of the stuff from This Is My Next. And look, I'm not going to lie. I love Nokia hardware. They make great, solid phones. They've always have. I had an N95 back in the day, and I used to love that thing. That was, you know, before people were really into smartphones. Smartphones were your Palms, your Blackberries, and Nokias. And honestly, I wanted Migo to do well, but I think the ship sailed. That's done.
Well, that's what everyone was saying. That's why Nokia dropped Migo, is because they were looking at, by what, 2014, they were going to have a total of 3 Migo devices released. And that's a lot of, I mean, how many years have they been developing it at that point? Like 3 years, 4 years? How many developers on there? That's a lot of money. And you're going to have 3 devices in that time?
Yeah, no, the project is just bleeding money, and it's not doing anything for anyone, really.
Yeah, and honestly, the mobile marketplace doesn't, even though it was kind of a cross-platform thing, it doesn't need another contestant. And I like it. I don't think it fit. It was great enough to kick anybody out, especially because it was a little slow on the uptake of. You know, they're behind the times. And so I don't think it really could have done any good for them to keep it. It was decent, though. Looks good.
Well, you know, for those Windows Phone 7 users, if that device that they showed with Migo on it, if that is anything, you know, if that's what you're going to expect for a Windows Phone 7 phone, you guys got some sweet hardware coming your way.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited. Trust me on that one. It's one of the things, like, is they, you know, as soon as people started talking about that whole merger, it was like, like you said, Nokia makes good hardware, and especially if, hopefully, Microsoft isn't letting them play too much with the specs requirement. I know the Qualcomm processor thing's already kind of been shot down. But if they let them, you know, do some good hardware stuff on it, you know, build a solid phone and then throw a obviously non-skinned version of this phone 7, 8, whatever it is at the time, on there, it would be good. I can't see anything bad coming from it.
No, not at all. And again, you know, the biggest thing that we were talking about with the HP devices, you need a lot of people to have this stuff in their hands. And that's what Microsoft's clearly doing. You know, partnering with Nokia is no mistake. It's no accident.
Yeah.
They know that they can put out phones and phones that that people want to buy.
I've noticed that a lot of the Windows Phone 7 has caught on overseas fairly quickly. I've seen a lot of, if you look at like the WP7 tag on Twitter, it's not, you know, solely in the US. One of the devs that I follow is from Australia. He's got this whole group of Australian WP7 devs that, you know, that's what they do. They play with Windows Phone 7. Nokia already has a worldwide market. I mean, everyone knows Nokia.
And I think in the long run, it's going to help them out more than the iPhone.
Yeah, I think it'll help them both out. I mean, initially it's going to help Microsoft a lot because they're going to get their, you know, they're going to get their fingers in the international market.
And everybody knows Microsoft already.
Yeah, but then they're going to be doing it on Nokia hardware, and everyone knows Nokia hardware
as being awesome sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and a big thing about Nokia that a lot of people don't realize is that when they make their unlocked phones, they play nice with just about every single possible carrier you could think of. Like, I can't remember the phone offhand, but they do have a phone now that's compatible with both AT&T and T-Mobile. Like, it's a big deal, you know, like, for world travelers, people who don't want to buy phones on contract, you know, the ability to buy the phone that you want is a big step up. And if it comes preloaded with Windows Phone 7, hey. Yeah.
That's, I mean, that's crossing over. That's kind of why I'm hoping LTE takes over in the U.S. for every carrier.
Yeah.
Because I'm tired of seeing awesome phones like, you know, the Evo looks good, but I don't really want to have to stick with Sprint. I just want to buy the phone and have it work. I want to, you know, buy it unlocked, and then that way carriers have to, they don't just have the phones that you want, they have the plans that you want.
Yeah, and
they have to fight for the customer.
Right, and the only way that's going to happen is if we have some kind of standard that everyone has to adhere to, you know, in the mobile market. I mean, it's really the only way that's going to happen. If everyone has to be, say, if everyone's on LTE in the US, then you can't say, oh, well, you know, we have the iPhone. The iPhone isn't enough, or maybe it is, but it isn't enough to sway someone who wants whatever phone they want. If you are an Android user and you like the Evo, then you should buy the Evo, whether you're on Sprint, AT&T, Mobile, Verizon, or whoever. You know, and that's just the way it should work.
All right. Agreed. Last up on the tech news for tonight is actually also on the topic of operating systems. Oblong. If you've never heard of Oblong, you should definitely look into it and check it out, because it's a new operating system that's entirely cross-platform as well, and pretty much is straight out of Minority Report.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet.
Minority Report. Is that what the Border Patrol sends up? I'm confused.
No, it's the movie that Steven always used to get confused with, iRobot.
Yes, I did my homework. But no, oblong, what it does is it uses either your hand gestures, like a Wiimote sort of thing, and uses all these screens, devices, smartphones, tablets, etc., where you could pretty much just seamlessly use the operating system from an interface to transfer stuff between devices. And you could pull up pictures, windows, zoom in, zoom out, rotate them, etc. It's really hard to describe. I mean, Minority Report is the best example, but if you go to TechCrunch and look at their oblong thing, I know Kevlar will post it on her Twitter feed and in the chat, and also it'll be on our topic list. It'll be in the
show notes, yeah,
it'll be in the show notes as well. Check this out. There's two videos at the very bottom, the demonstration video and the G-Speak overview. It's just really bizarre how far we've come with technology and what these guys could end up doing. I know you've all seen the video. What are your impressions on this? What are your first thoughts? Is this thing something that's considered feasible, or is this just one of those other pipe dreams that we've seen?
It's illogical. The scale at which this is jumping, you know, it's like, oh, let's push this over there, push that over there. You know, that it doesn't have to be that ridiculously. First of all, if you're
going that 5-monitor setup they have there is badass.
Yeah, it looks really cool. It's really shiny, and that's going to get attention. People love shiny crap. But
and it even works like on their phone and a tablet.
Yeah, but okay, think about this. You want to send pictures to someone, you set your phone on the table, syncs up, whatever the hell, and you go, oh, I want to send that picture and that picture and that picture, and this whole selection of pictures, and it's cool. It costs thousands of dollars to do something you could have done via
Dropbox. I can't imagine how much that costs.
The cost for what you get, I mean, it's really cool for sharing. I did, what is it like? We want everyone's pixels in a shared workspace where they collide. Well, first of all, colliding in terms of data is not a good thing. And also,
in terms of physics, is not a good thing.
Well, yeah, but network collisions aren't a good thing either. It also says the key is to give everyone control over what's happening. That's like having 7 people standing around a steering wheel on a bus. That's not very intelligent.
Okay. Instead of thinking about it this large scale, let's take it down to like small scale real quick. I can't remember the name of it. About a year or two back, Microsoft had done this sort of concept video of, you know, the future with Microsoft, etc., where they pretty much...
The table surface?
No, not the table surface. It was just like a promo video, and it was all CGI. There wasn't anything, you know, real about it, but it was like their vision of the future with Microsoft. And there was this one part that really stood out to me that pretty much is exactly where this thing would come into play. But it was this very nice business-oriented fellow on his computer doing his stuff, his charts and his spreadsheets and real-time internet stuff. And all he did was he sort of like, I think he just swiped his hand or he like pressed a button, and whatever he was viewing and doing on that screen at that time just sort of jumped over to his tablet, which was, you know, docked pretty much a foot away, and just picked it up and continued doing what he was doing as he was walking away. I mean, on a small scale like that, that's where I could see oblong being a really killer cross-platform sort of thing to use.
Yeah, but that still kind of would keep it very niche markets, wouldn't it? I mean, like, that would still be essentially some sort of, I guess, business use only tool, right?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, if you're, let's say, playing a game on your Xbox, you know, let's say Microsoft takes that and uses technology, you know, you're doing your game on your Xbox and you want to pop it over to your Windows Phone 7 or your Windows Phone tablet or whatever, you know, do something like that. If you're reading a magazine on your computer or a blog and you just sort of swipe it over to your tablet, to your iPhone or to your iPad or something like that, you know, it's not really necessarily limited to a business consumer, to a business person. It's also consumer friendly as well.
Yeah, I guess that could work, I guess, but it still becomes a matter of like, well, if you think about it, like when you say something like, you know, you're going to view a magazine on your desktop and then you're going to take it with you, essentially that's, you know, things like Read It Later and Instapaper. I mean, it's not the same thing, but that's kind of what we're doing already, right?
Right. I mean, this is just a way of completely eliminating the unnecessary steps in between. I mean, like, it's exactly where you were. Like, I mean, maybe instant paper, I mean, maybe reading a magazine won't be the best example, but for example, let's say watching a movie or watching a YouTube clip or something where you just swipe it over to your tablet and it picks off right there where you had left off in real time. I mean, that's where I see Oblong being, you know, a killer app in terms of that sort of thing. And combine it with Kinect, and you've got a really viable product in your hands.
That'd be interesting.
Is my opinion, but judge for yourselves. Check it out. Give us your thoughts and your impressions in the comments or in Twitter and email, etc. But on that note, time for WTF news.
Oh yeah.
Okay, first up tonight is, how would you like to have an apple-infused semen shot, horse semen shot, rather, as part of your entree at a restaurant?
You know, I pride myself on being willing to try anything once, sometimes twice, but, why did someone think that I'm going to let people drink semen?
Well, Chef Jason Varley of the Green Man Pub has started serving apple-infused horse semen shots to his customers, and they're not cheap. The delicacy comes at about $300 for 20 vials of horse semen. Which, first off, I don't even want to start to think about how the hell they cultivate horse semen.
Well, I'll tell you how they do it. They go out and get a horse, you know, give them a good rub down, and stick a tube on the end and catch it.
And cue guns, though.
It's the same way they do it for artificial insemination, man.
Yeah,
it's not rocket science. It's husbandry.
I thought you just go and you jerk off in a cup, and that was it, like sperm bank.
Yeah, but a horse can't jack itself off. You gotta help them out.
Well, why the hell would you be jerking off a horse to begin with?
No, how do you think they get other horses pregnant?
What, they just can't put a male horse and a female horse together?
Sometimes it doesn't work. So they have this fan, they get the horse to mount, and they just catch it. And then they use like a... the equivalent of like a turkey baster. And help up. I don't know. Apparently, it's a redneck thing. Guess you've never been on a farm before.
Well, this is all part of the nationwide 14th annual Monteith Beer and Wild Food Challenge. So I guess all these places sort of try to come up with some crazy ass.
I love how the story kind of plays into the stereotype about women loving horse cocks.
Well, ladies thought it was great. A couple were going home and get their husbands to eat grass.
A couple of women were worried their children might bear children with long faces.
Some guys have actually manned up and they said it was palatable. Even the chef admits to drinking it, saying it was okay and it was like custard. In case you were wondering what horse semen tasted like.
I mean, I guess I'd give it a go, but I don't know if I'd pay $300.
Well, you $300 for 20 vials, so that's a lot of...
It's pronounced vials, Steven.
Vials.
A veil is what a lady wears over her face at a wedding.
Horse semen might come into play to that, too. You never know.
Hey, you never know. That's right.
The good news is, I don't think anyone's had a particular taste for it. No one's addicted to it. Let's put it that way, says the chef.
That's my new favorite shot. Honey, you want to go down to the bar and get some horse semen shots?
And for those who are concerned about any health issues, this poses no concerns to any health, to any health issues and stuff like that. It's perfectly safe to consume. So, just to let you know.
Well, it is. I'm sure it's high in protein.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah. I'm sorry. This whole thing sounds like a really, really bad, like, frat night. That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
What? What? Like, frat? Who's frat? What?
I guess you missed out.
No, that sounds like some real crazy shit. It's just like you spend the entire night trying to convince a girl to give you a sloppy blowjob. It's like, yeah, it tastes like custard. No one's ever gotten addicted to it. All right.
Mud Monster makes a great point.
Yeah, I was about to say to sum him up, yeah.
Who would have thought that drinking horse semen would be a good idea?
Well, you know what? Someone tried it with cows. I know that's not how it really works.
The voice of reason.
It sounds like when my daddy told me as a kid that things were started by some guy with the name Wheel, and he invented the wheel.
Oh. Well, anyway, we're going to
get back to... Same kind of logic.
We'll get back to more farm animal stories in a little bit, because there's more. But for now, we're going to deal with just, you know, a good old human-on-human interaction. So... A man went to the cops and claimed that he didn't get his money's worth from a man who was wearing a dress. That's the title of the article. Said, this was in Florida, by the way, in God Martin County.
Making another appearance, Florida. Making us proud.
He went to the police and said that he was ripped off by a homosexual, saying that a man in a black dress had taken his $125. Not quite sure how this story folds out because it doesn't really make sense. But turns out that the guy... He was going to trade sexual favors for money, this guy. But he then felt that he did not get his money's worth and wanted his money back. So he went to the cops and demanded that they make this guy give back the money.
That's because ridiculous. Did you ever see that old episode of Cops where a lady flags down a police officer and says, "Hey, can you get my $20 back? This lady didn't actually give me crack."
Exactly.
It's the same kind of fucking thing.
The deputy explained it didn't quite work that way.
I can believe it.
It didn't work that way.
Yeah, I guess more of the story is if you're... I don't think there is a moral to the story.
Moral of the story?
If you were trying to get yourself a prostitute and you feel that you got shortchanged, don't talk to the police about it. I think that's the moral of the story. Because you'll just go to jail for soliciting prostitution. and you would have to plead guilty because you obviously tried.
Well, there was also drinking and cocaine involved, but he fessed up to that. The guy fessed up to that. My God.
I don't know. He's just
not too bright. Next time, just sign a written agreement, a contract with a guy to sign off saying that if you're not satisfaction guaranteed or your money back, how about that? Next time you're looking for...
Groupon.
I think he should have figured it out before he handed the money over to, hey, this guy might not be a lady.
I think he was counting the fact that it was a dude. I just think he was just really pissed off that, you know, the happy end wasn't that happy for him.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's all right too, I guess, but
I mean, to his own.
This isn't a heavily regulated industry. There's no standard. If you aren't satisfied, I'm sorry. Don't go to the prostitute again.
There's a code, man. You gotta uphold the code. Oh, boy. Anyway, off to some fun... is this Florida again? Yes, Northwest Florida Regional Airport. A 95-year-old woman was detained by the TSA and forced to remove her adult diaper and searched.
That's just awkward.
That's just fucked up. I'm sorry. That's just fucked up. Go on, please.
95-year-old woman, 105 pounds, barely able to stand. And she was in her final stages for her battle with leukemia. When her mother, who was in a wheelchair, was asked to remove an adult diaper in order to complete a pat-down search.
I've actually witnessed something similar to this. I don't think there was an adult diaper removal. But I was at the airport in Florida, actually. The Sanford airport. And there's this old lady in a wheelchair. And they had tons of problem getting her through the security checkpoint, because apparently they're not wheelchair friendly. Like, the airport provides wheelchairs if you really need one, I guess. But the queue that you have to go through to get there isn't wide enough for the wheelchair. So her elderly husband was literally having to push a few feet, let go, move the post, and then push some more. And they get to the checkpoint, like, oh, you got to go over here. And they're, like, feeling this lady up. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Oh,
if there's anyone that's a threat, it's definitely not her.
They ended up taking this woman to a private room for a more extensive search, by the way.
Well, why did they have her remove the adult diaper? I've never heard of someone, for a pat-down, being told to remove their underwear.
I guess maybe it was they couldn't feel if she was hiding.
No. Like, she said the security personnel then came out and told her they would need her to remove her Depends diaper because it was soiled and was impeding their search.
I mean, okay, I understand from a very basic level why they check for stuff like this.
Well, yeah,
because
I mean,
is exactly where you're gonna, if you want to destroy a plane or something like that, you're going to want to make it so that people don't actually want to search you. Or so they just kind of do a cursory job and just get you out of their hair. I understand that.
Yeah, I can see that.
There's some common sense. Like, if it's like a fake old lady or something, I mean, you can tell if someone's really in trouble.
Yeah. But I mean, if this lady would have had some form of a doctor's note or something saying, hey, this lady legitimately has leukemia, I think that should be enough to say, hey.
She couldn't even walk and get up. I mean, she had to be helped through the entire procedure.
To say, I am disappointed.
Seriously. I mean, I understand you need to check. Well, I don't really understand the whole concept, but I get the idea of why they want to do it, even though I don't really think it's that necessary. But I mean, there's a line where you're like, okay, this person legitimately needs these things.
Well, the old lady's daughter has a piece of advice. She is going to be filing a complaint, and she says, "I'm not one to make waves, but dad gummit, this is wrong. People need to know next time it could be you."
I really think what the TSA needs to do is come up with a better system for handicapped people in wheelchairs, because the current system is not effective.
It's true.
And they need to come up with something specialized for them instead of just, holy shit, this person's in a wheelchair, they must be a terrorist, because they would think that we wouldn't search them.
I would help if the requirements to be a TSA agent were just a little bit higher than being mall security. That would be kind of like the first thing. But
well, yeah, but that's expensive.
Yeah.
All right. We're going back to animal stories now, this time in China, where there's a new craze going on, a new fad where you sort of transform your animal's looks to make it look like a different animal, like dyeing its hair and giving it haircuts and stuff. For example, taking a dog and painting it like a giant panda.
Picture?
Oh gosh, somebody needs to.
It's a big panda.
And if you go down, there's a golden retriever that's painted to look like a tiger.
That one is pretty damn cool.
What is it with tiger and panda dogs?
But yes, this is the newest crazy thing going on in China. Paint your animal to make it look... I mean, I'm guessing they're grooming it too and giving it haircuts to make it look like something else.
That is... China. What the fuck, man? I know it's usually Japan, what the fuck, but... Holy shit. Like, I think it's ridiculous my sister dresses her dog up in a sweater.
Yeah.
But painting it?
Oh, gosh. I can't get over the fact that there's a midget panda that's a dog.
Yep.
I mean, that first picture, a little girl, she's like, look at my panda dog! It just looks so uncomfortable.
The dog looks like... It just looks like it's been shamed into submission.
It's like, I'm just going to lay here, hope they go away.
Well, this has been spawned because now there is more disposable income in China. So it says, with more money, newly wealthy Chinese have embraced dog-owning culture with a vengeance. They're being brought up to restaurants, fussed over in public, dressed up in ridiculous outfits, and dyed to look like ferocious tigers.
Well, you know, whenever I have more money than I know what to do with, the first thing I think about is, you know what? I'd like to have a panda dog.
See, that's where you're wrong. What you need to do is you need to say, I want a golden retriever that looks like a tiger.
Really, what I just do is I'm like, I'm going to buy some more booze. Is really where my disposable income goes. I could give two shits about painting my dog.
Well, seeing as that they're splitting the entire former wealth of the Americas amongst the Chinese population, I think they're all pretty drunk when they think of this. This is like step two.
Step two? I've never been that drunk. I mean,
obviously, because you don't have
the tiger dog is kind of cool, but it's not a tiger. I think it'd be cooler to have a tiger.
I mean, in the 80s. When people saw Scarface for the first time, they all thought, fuck, I should buy a tiger. I don't think anyone ever said, I'm going to make $1 million and then I'm going to paint my dog to look like a tiger.
No, the people with like $100 tend to think of stuff like that. People with $1 million.
Well, I can't get an actual tiger, but the next best thing is a dog that looks like a tiger. Why don't I just get a big cat?
Why don't you just actually buy a tiger?
Because tigers eat like 300 pounds of food in a week.
Hey, well, a few years back, somebody kept a tiger in a project in New York City. And that wasn't even the only animal they had. They had, no lie, a crocodile in the bathtub.
Oh, I read about... Did we cover that on WTF News one time?
I don't know.
Back early last year?
There were some people actually on my campus... That got in trouble for having numerous exotic animals in their dorm room, and I have no idea how they did it. They had like two or three baby alligators, a bunch of like snakes, and but how did you get this shit into your dorm room?
Typical college mentality. They stick it in their pants.
I'm not walking up any stairs with an alligator in my pants.
It was done immediately following semen shots, apparently.
I don't understand why people. I mean, tigers are cool, but I wouldn't want one as a pet.
Well, I don't understand. In general.
Well, that's true.
Well, yes, people have a weird infatuation with animals sometimes, especially our last WTF story of the night. A man from Greenwood, Mississippi. Was caught having sex with show hogs.
Well, there's your problem.
but the story gets better. 52-year-old Andrew Lee Nash, he was arrested. And after police set up surveillance cameras in the owner's stalls near wherever this place is in Mississippi, and he was caught having sex with the hogs, the prize show hogs.
And they weren't just regular hogs, they were show hogs.
Yeah, yes, prize. They were. Regular show hogs couldn't do. But after the local veterinarian did a routine examination on the hogs, he was told that four of the hogs had a vaginal infection.
Good God, sir. You didn't even wrap it up. I mean, I know some people will pretty much fuck anything, but at least wear a Jimmy hat, man.
Well, this is what tipped off the owners of the hogs that somebody was messing with them. So that's how they set up a sting operation with the cameras to catch whoever was doing this.
And this was the audio from that sting operation.
Oh man, Mississippi.
Okay, this. Okay, four of the hogs were.
Leave me in. Go press it.
Okay.
Go away.
Oh, Wheatley. But it wasn't only just four hogs had vaginal infections because of this. The man got charged with 12 counts of unnatural intercourse. 12. And if he is found guilty, he could face 120 years in jail.
That just ain't right, man.
Well, you know what? I hope he goes to jail, because there's going to be some definite ironic justice in there.
I don't even think that would be... Oh, God, no! No!
Well,
I'm perplexed at this man.
I'm sort of wondering how the hell he was able to catch them and do this and keep them sort of still, because pigs are smart freaking animals. Have you ever tried to catch a pig? They run like hell. They're really hard to catch.
Were they in the pens? I thought they were in the pens. I thought that was part of the story.
Well, yeah. So I'm guessing that maybe the pens are like those ones that keep them sort of still.
Well, he did it at night, so he might have just snuck off on them while they were taking a nap.
Surprise butt eggs.
Grab them by the haunches and just hump them into submission, you know? Still, not cool.
My thing is, a prize, or a show hog, that's going to be a pretty big animal.
Yeah, they're pretty good size piggies.
400 pounds at least?
Minimum.
I mean, I don't know.
Minimum. Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Hog it big.
Dude, yeah.
Yeah, and, look, I'm the city boy, clearly.
Oh, you never been to the county fair and they got the pig jugging contest?
Never been to an FAA meet. Or FFA, sorry.
Yeah, FFA. Peace Farmers of America.
I can't.
Nope.
I can't imagine even wanting to get close to that thing with my... my wing hanging out.
Maybe, yeah, I wouldn't either, but maybe he thought it'd make his dick smell like bacon? That's the only logic I can conclude.
Your it's logic worse is too. Weird.
Oh, I think we gotta cut it off right here.
I'm grasping at straws here, I don't know.
Okay, this has gone far enough. I'm drawing the line.
Draw the line of bacon dick.
Oh boy. Okay. That's it. We're done for the night. That was it. Oh, wow. Yeah. Thank you for tuning in and listening. Thank you for participating in the Ustream, even though you got random commercials thrown at you during the live broadcast for some reason. Go figure. Thank you to everybody who's downloading and listening to this, and thank you to everybody who reads the site. As well, you could hit us up at twitter.com/noisecast. And visit us at thenoisecast.com. Read us. Check out our Spotify exclusive, if you haven't, by Eric. And hopefully they'll be the first of many more, or the second of many more exclusives to come from the Noisecast. So on tonight's episode, we had Alberto, a.k.a. Enos One.
Hey, hey.
Ray, a.k.a. Gonzo Rider.
I don't apologize, bacon dick.
And of course, Chris, a.k.a. Kevlar Menace.
I'm wondering if he doesn't apologize for saying it or apologize for having it.
I wish I had it, but I'm not going to fuck a pig to try and get it.
It gives a whole new meaning to the term hogging, doesn't it?
Well, the university mascot is a hog, so I guess I can't really say too much.
Okay, Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Tune in, same time, same place next week for the Noisecast.